This is Bess Corellitz, December 15th, 1997, second interview with Ivan J. Novick. Ivan, our last session, we finished when you were in the Army and your mother had said to you that you spend one more year or so there and then you would leave.
Right.
Now, what happened after that?
Well, I had a very good relationship with my commanding officer, and rather than having to wait a few more months of that year in 1947.
All right, Ivan, we were discussing right after you left the service.
My commanding officer, when I decided not to remain in the service, as his aide, and go to school in Washington, back to college, he said, if you'd like to get out right away, he said, that's okay with me, and he made arrangements for me to leave the service early. It was actually June of 1947. And I went to Bowling Field to be discharged that day, and I was the only one being discharged, and they said, let's try to set a record, how quickly can you get out of the service? And everybody was part of the process, and I was out of the service in 16 minutes, and which was at that time the record for getting a discharge. Came home and I had applied and attended in the summer session at the University of Pittsburgh, where I stayed for two more years, since I already had 2 years of college, through the cadet program of the Air Force. And I was active in college. I won the award as the Frauder of the Year for Phi Epsilon Pi in my senior year, 1949. And I also was the business manager of the Pitt News in 1949, my senior year. And college was a wonderful experience. I knew while I was there that I would never experience it again. It was just wonderful, and I developed, actually, the friends that I had then, I still have. The majority of my friends today are those guys and girls that I went to school with. Always new friends, but the original group has maintained their relationship throughout the years, and it's always a marvel to not only Natalie, but to Mary, that exists in the city of Pittsburgh.
You just mentioned Natalie, I believe. And we'd like to know about your courtship and your marriage and how many children.
Mm-hmm.
Some of Natalie's background, too.
Natalie grew up in Leechburg, Pennsylvania, and a few years younger than me, and she is where my grandparents lived, and I used to go every summer for a couple weeks to visit my grandparents. I would see Natalie, and she was just a little girl that lived in the community. And then when I came back from the service, and I went, you may recall, there was a place called the Willows, where everybody used to go to swim, and I went there in the summer of 47, I guess it was, and there I saw Natalie for the first time in a few years, and she was no longer a little girl, but a pretty young lady. And I asked her for a date over the 4th of July, and she said she could not accept because her father had passed away, not too many months previously, and she did not want to leave her mother alone for the holidays. And so we did not get together until the fall. She came in and went to, at that time, Pennsylvania College for Women, which is now Chatham College. And I had my first date with her, and happened to go out that night with a gentleman named Bob Perlman, and came back to the car, and I told him, I think I just met the girl that I'm going to marry. And he looked at me, he said, how can you make such a statement on such short on my first date? I said, it's just the way that I feel. I said, I think I've met the only girl that might be able to live with me. And he laughed, and it took me about 3 years to persuade her. Natalie had her first date when she was 17 years old. Came from a very sheltered background, and she didn't believe when a young man called for a date that you said no. And so to get a date with Natalie at that time, you had to call a month in advance, 6 weeks in advance, and I just refused to do that. So consequently, I didn't see her for almost a year because I wasn't willing to make that commitment. But I was very friendly with her family and her mother, and I was living at the paternity house. My family was not living in Pittsburgh. And her mother began to type my papers. And I would be there when guys would pick her up to take her out and be there when they brought her home. But all I can say is after a period of a couple of years, we agreed to agree. And we got married in August. And we got engaged in 1950. And Natalie was in her last year of college, and we were going to wait till the following year to get married, but my mother-in-law, Libby Agar-Mogerman, she did not believe in long engagements, and so we got married the 27th of August of 1950. We were the last couple married at the Urban Room, William Penn Hotel, without air conditioning. And after that, they air conditioned the room. It was extremely warm that day. We moved in with my mother-in-law on Hobart Street, 5538 Hobart Street. She had a lovely duplex. And I always said I saw my mother-in-law more when I lived out of the house than when I lived in the house, because she was never there. And
what was the address on Hobart Street?
5538 Hobart Street. And then my mother-in-law met Herman Mogerman. Her name was Libby Agar to begin with, and then she met Herman Mogerman. And they got married in 1951. And mother moved into his home on Beechwood Boulevard. And I've always said that she did it primarily so I could have more cupboard space. So it was, you know, it was a great marriage. And great relationship, and then we lived, all three of the children were born while we lived on Hobart Street.
What are your children's names?
My older son's name is Howard Allen Novick. He's an oral surgeon, maxillofacial surgeon. Howard graduated Taylor Alderdice.
Born when?
He was born on November the 2nd, 1952, and my mother-in-law's birthday was November 4th, and I used to get the two of them confused, so it's always been a joke between my son and myself. Howard married Cindy Enlow, and they were married about 8 years, and they had two children, Jason, who's now 10, and Hillary, who's now 8. Howard was living in Watertown, New York, and after he and Cindy separated and were divorced, Howard moved to Pittsburgh, and he lives on Devonshire Road, that little street across from the Temple here in Pittsburgh. Howard is remarried. His wife is a nurse, Leanne, just graduating as a nurse practitioner. She has been in charge of the StatMed helicopter, been in charge of emergency room at Allegheny General. She's very proficient in her profession.
What is her name again?
Leanne, capital L-E-A-N-N, Leanne. And she, you know, she's quite capable. And she has two children by a previous marriage, two girls, who are right now 14 and 12.
And their names?
The older daughter's name is Davy, D-E-V-I, and the younger daughter's name is Mina, capital M-I-N-A. And my second son, Bill, people ask me who the nicest person I've ever known. I would say my second son, Bill, is just one special young man. Bill
born.
Was born in 1955, on September 29th, 1955. And Bill was married to Linda Brin from Cincinnati, who he met when he was a counselor at Emma Kaufman camp. And Bill, I think if the field was as fair as it is compensation-wise today, then as it is today, I think Bill would have stayed in the social services. He was just very good at it, but decided that maybe he had to go a different direction. And Bill and Linda were married, and they have their oldest son is Nathan. They were young when they got married. And they were married in Cincinnati, Ohio. And they have a little guy, who's not so little anymore, his name is Nathan Novick. Nathan Novick will be bar mitzvahed on February 28th, 1998, at the temple in Boca Raton. And he makes us very proud. He's a wonderful child. And we're very fortunate that Bill and Linda separated, were divorced, both have remarried, but they always put Nathan ahead of everything, and Bill and Linda have a wonderful relationship, and they have a wonderful relationship together with their son, and we're very fortunate, although it doesn't always work out that way. My youngest daughter, Phyllis, my only daughter, Phyllis, was born in 1958, on June the 7th. And Phyllis is a lawyer. Well, pardon me, I should go back to Bill. Bill's in the real estate business, he's like I am. Bill is a senior officer and director of leasing for a company known as IRT Properties, headquartered in Atlanta. Bill is running their division in New Orleans right now. He got there after being with our company, my company, for 10 years. And we managed all the properties for IRT, and Bill was in charge of that account, and they became very close, and one day, it's like hiring a football coach, the president of the company, good friend Don McLeod, called and said, I'd like to talk to your son about his joining our company. I said, well, you have my permission. So Bill did meet with him, and they offered him a very nice position with the company, and he took it, and he's there today, and very happy, doing very nicely. Bill has remarried. He went from Boca Raton, where our offices were, he went to Atlanta, where the home office was, before he went to New Orleans, and while in Atlanta, he met a lovely young lady by the name of Faye Rosen. And the Rosen family, Faye's the fourth generation of the Rosens in Atlanta. And we're happy for Bill, and we're happy for her. I see her appear to have a wonderful marriage, and I'm happy for Bill. He's part of a wonderful extended family. And going back to Phyllis, she was born, as I said, June 7th, 1958. And Phyllis, at the time she was a young gal, she was about 14, she always wanted to be a lawyer. And it's unusual to make a commitment that young, but she went to Whiteman School, and then she went to Winchester. So for the first five grades, and then she went to Winchester, Thurston, until she graduated. And then she went to Washington University of St. Louis. And the reason she went there is because her brother Bill went there, and she thought it would be wonderful to be a freshman when your brother was a senior. And she went there. I sort of hoped that she would go to the University of Pennsylvania, but she said she would transfer at the end of her second year. But she decided It was a wonderful experience. She did extremely well. She graduated in 3.5 years. And Phyllis, her first year, her first summer vacation, she was she worked for Congressman Walgreen, Doug Walgreen, in Washington, D.C. And her second year, she worked for Senator John Hines in his office, and they worked on the first environmental bill, I remember. And she was in the halls of Congress when it was passed, and it was a very exciting period of time for her. And then the third year, she worked for Senator Benson, and Senator Benson was another senator who ran for president at that time. He ran for president. Anyway, they were the co-chairman of the Senate Economic Committee, and she worked for them. And we really thought Phyllis would end up in Washington, D.C., because she really liked it there. And she was accepted for a program at Georgetown University, I think it was. George Washington, I think, where it's a 5-year program for law and public policy. And at that time, it was only given at 4 schools. One was Texas, one was Michigan, one was George Washington, the other was one of the Ivy League schools. And she decided, and she was going to go there. Then she met a young man by the name of Steve Silverman, who was here in Pittsburgh, and decided that she would forego going to Washington, and she entered the law school at the University of Pittsburgh. So, and of course, they subsequently got married. She did very well in law school, law review, all the nice things that parents, you know, like to see. And she then decided that she did not want to go in and do. She precepted at the Bascom Sears, and I, of course, offered her a position there. But she didn't want to be in the library for 3 years. She was impatient. So she went into practice really for herself. She was in the same office as a number of other attorneys, including her cousin Joe Breeman and Ed Weiss. And she practiced for a couple of years. And I have a wonderful story to tell you. I just hate to take your time about her.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
She has a cousin. Steve has a cousin. His name may come to me here. His wife's an artist. They live in Hilton Head now. They used to live in South Hills. And Sherry's her first name. I just can't think of the last name. But anyway, he's in the insurance business. So he one day said to his cousin, Steve Silverman, my son-in-law, I said, all right, I'm going to put Phyllis's name on what they call the blue back for a client he had just sold $500,000 policy for. And she was fine. So about 6 months later, John was 42 years old. He passed away. And Phyllis's name was on the blue back, and PNC was the trustee, and they called her and said, Mrs. Silverman, this is pretty much cut and dried case. We'll pay you X dollars. I think it was $7,500. You'll handle it for the estate. And she said, fine. They called her back about 2 weeks later, and they said, Mrs. Silverman, the Prudential is denying payment. We have to go to court. This is a major case now. We have to hire you to do it, and now we have to agree on a fee. So the fee would be, you know, rather major, and usually it's a third of the of what you get. So she took the case, and she called the attorney for the for Prudential. He said, Mrs. Silverman, why don't you write a brief why you think we're liable to pay this? Because they thought that this gentleman may have had AIDS beforehand, and that's the reason for his untimely death. Anyway, Phyllis spent 52 hours, wrote the brief, it was April of that year, whatever year it was, submitted it, and a few weeks later she went to her office on a Saturday, which she seldom did. She went to the office, and there's a letter from Prudential. Dear Mrs. Silverman, we've read your brief. We think it's in order. We are assuming payment. And if you're close, please find a check for $250,000. and the remaining $250,000 will be paid within 2 weeks. So, I think my daughter is the only one who's an attorney who took the Hippocratic Oath. She doesn't tell you anything. She's terrific. Yeah. Name, rank, and serial number. So, in any event, this is one of the few times she came to her father for counsel and advice. She said, "Dad," she said, "I'm supposed to get a third." And she said, "I have to appear before Judge Eunice," is it Friedman, I think. She said, "Do you have any suggestion?" I said, "Yes, these are minor children. You're very fortunate. This is a windfall for a young girl who's just in practice a year, 2 years." I said, "I would volunteer to the judge that you would take 20% for a fee instead of what grabbing a third." And she did say that to the judge, and the judge said, "Well, first, I'm glad you volunteered, because that's all I was going to give you." So, any event, the bottom line, the reason I tell you this story, the bank was very impressed. And the head of the trust department said they had an opening at the bank, and they would like her to put in an application. But Phyllis said she didn't really have any interest in working for the bank. She put in the application for 33 people. They cut it to 11. She told them she had no interest. They asked her to please go through the next interview. They cut it to 6. She was still there. And then they went for the last to 3. And again, she said she had no interest. She's the winner. And they won her. And then she said, "Well, I've got 2 problems." She said, "One," she said, "it's the reunion of my high school, my college reunion. And I'm a chairperson. And I have to be, I can't go to work because this was in May." So he said, "That's how you'll come in after that." And then he said, "I got another problem. We have a timeshare in Hilton Head, and we have to go. We have 2 weeks there. You'll come in after that." So the bottom line is, she went to work for the bank, much to her surprise, and she's very happy there. She's now a vice president of PNC, the trust department, and she's really very pleased with her role there. So anyway, that sort of brings you up to date.
Does she have children?
Yes, Phyllis has 2 children. Natalie, who's 8 years old, and Natalie became sort of a mini legend here in the community. By the time she was about 2 or 3 years old, Natalie had 2 working parents, so she went. The JCC was just a wonderful facility to take care of. You know, after she was about 6 months old, Phyllis took a leave till for about 6 months. And there's a wonderful gal up there. Her first name's Carmela. She's been with there for many years. She's wonderful. Anyway, she's a very close friend of the family. She's a school teacher also. And she became like a member of the family. And it was really wonderful. And all the girls would go up to do their exercise at 8 o'clock would always come up and get what they called their Natalie fix in the morning after exercise. And if you know Rachel Marcus and the others at the center, they'll tell you Natalie's stories. They were very, very unique. And I remember one day I was up there, and she was coming just to stop and see her from time to time, just drop in. And she was coming down the hall, leading as always, our group of girls. "Hi, Papa. Hey, everybody, that's my Papa." And just walked on. And now this other young lady comes over from me, and she said, "Are you Natalie's everyone's grandfather?" I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "My name is," and I don't remember the name, "I'm from Baltimore." She said, "And I'm here," during the summer. She said, "I'm here working for the JCC. This is my second year." And she said, "I just wanted to tell you that the only reason I came back was because of your granddaughter."
Oh, my.
She said, "I told him if I could have that child in my class, I would come back for another year." So, you know, it's another thing that makes you feel good. Mm. So, any event, so Phyllis has an 18-month old child, Alexa, and Alexa is terrific. As you know, I don't know about you ladies, but I have a problem. My problem is I don't know which of my own children I love the most, and I don't know which of my grandchildren I love the most.
I understand.
And I hope that you're all in the same position. Mm-hmm. So any event,
yours are perfect,
so it's. So the children, we're very proud of them and their children. Natalie, as you know, became a leader in this community, mm-hmm. and was head of a number of organizations. I think she gave a major thrust to the Federation. She chaired the women's division. And very special lady, very unique. And I have a friend named Jack Goldsmith, who you may know. He's been my friend since college. He was over here one night after I married Mary. And he was lying in that couch over there. And Mary was sort of rubbing his back a little bit. And he said to me, "Ivan," he said, "you know," he said, "some people have said you've done a couple of things in your lifetime." He said, "I've known you too long," he said, "so you really can't impress me," he said, "in any way." He said, "but you know, any guy that can bring home two ladies like this in one lifetime, there must be something to you." So that's one of the nice things that I remember. And, you know, Mary Nellie died a very untimely death, and I was very fortunate to meet Mary. And
when did
Nellie die? Nellie passed away in July 29th, 1982, is when she passed away.
Before we go on to your present marriage and so forth, I'd like to talk to you and ask you about your Jewish family background with your children. Did they go to Rosh Sholem? Did you have any kind of practices here at your home? Holiday practices, those kind of things.
The children all, Howard was bar mitzvah to Tree of Life because at that time the children did not have bar mitzvahs. But myself and Hal Bigler were instrumental in changing that once Dr. Friedhoff retired and Dr. Jacob became the senior rabbi. And The children, I went to Sunday school. The boys did their preparation. I think as the years have progressed.
No, I'm going to get a cough drop. Excuse me.
Okay.
Or I'll stop this for now. I put my purse somewhere. you and Hal Bigler.
We sort of led the thought process about the institute of bar mitzvahs at Rosh Hashanah, and we were successful because Dr. Jacob was very supportive, and it was something whose time, the time had come. And by coincidence, my son Bill was the first bar mitzvah at Rosh Hashanah, and it was a very meaningful day. But I want to say that I'll always be indebted to Tree of Life Synagogue for Rabbi Halpern, Ken Silversmith, I think it was, who were so wonderful in preparing Howard for his bar mitzvah. And I always remember Rabbi Halpern. It was just a very meaningful 2 days, 3 days. And after it was over, I went to Rabbi Halpern and I thanked him very, very much for all his input and what he had done on behalf of our family and allowed us to become our mitzvah at the Tree of Life, and we were members of Tree of Life. I always remember his answer, and I think it's the epitome of what fundraising is all about, because Dr. Halpern said to me, "I'm sure you'll take that into consideration when you mail your check." And I thought it was very appropriate, and I did. But I would say, you know, in a more direct answer to your question, my children went through all of the facets and phases of religious education at Rosh Hashanah. As I said, I believe it improved each year as it went along. I think today Rosh Hashanah's religious program is certainly not orthodox, but it certainly is a very appropriate religious program, and it's obvious that they've moved more to the center than it was, you know, years ago. Many people have asked me why I didn't give my children more of a traditional, orthodox, or conservative religious education, since I had it from A to Z. And I don't have an answer that I think is truly appropriate. I think perhaps I recall that perhaps I had been too involved in religious education, and and found that maybe I didn't want them to have the same intensity that I went through, and I thought maybe that I was doing them a favor. This is on tape, but I don't mind. If I had it to do over again, I think that I would suggest to them, I wouldn't suggest to them, I would just make certain that perhaps their religious education would be more intensive than it was. And I think I would have tried to motivate them to go into school, advanced Jewish studies, you know, programs that were available at that time. And I didn't force that issue, and neither did Natalie, although they did very well, and we were very proud of them. But I think as I've looked at, been involved in trying to find a better way for a Jewish education in the community, I think that that's really very important in the years to come.
End of tape 2, side 1, to be continued on the other side.